So this is part two of the case from the transmission of light, Qing Yuan Xingji, the 34th patriarch. So I'll read the case out again and then move on to Kaizen's Taisho on the case and add some words. So the case. The 34th patriarch was Great Master Hongzhi, or Qing Yuan Xingji, Jingzi. He practiced in the community of Kaoxi, the 6th patriarch. He asked the patriarch, "What should I do as not to land in some class or stage?" And the patriarch asked, "What have you done so far?" And the master replied, "I have not even tried the four holy truth." The patriarch asked, "Into what stage will you end up?" The master said, "If I still have not tried the holy truth, what stage can there be?" The patriarch was greatly impressed with his potential. So then we move on to Taisho on the next page. And he starts off with saying, he never, obviously that's the master, he never discussed Buddhism with the crowd. He never discussed Buddhism with the crowd. So he didn't engage in philosophy, what is this, what is that. So he never really discussed it with the crowd, what Buddhism is. His silence, an especially unusual continuous practice. Now, I've been working on a koan with someone in here about transcending speech and silence. It's a great koan, transcending speech and silence. So eventually that'll come up. Yeah. So he practiced, he says here, or his silence, an especially unusual continuous practice. So don't take that literally, as in this is silence, this is speech. His silence, a continuous practice. So you could say concentration, if you like, is a silence. I can say words and still have silence. I can be silent it can be very, very silent in a very busy shopping center. It all depends on my state of mind. So his continuous practice, his silence, his inner core, you know, his concentration, if you like, to maintain that inner silence, that inner peace, that's what is meant by that, a continued practice, that inner peace, if you like. That doesn't mean to say that you can't go on with your day-to-day life, but that inner, that always concentrating on maintaining that inner peace, if you like, that was his practice amongst his day-to-day activities. He goes on, with such power of attention, and that's what Joriki is, with being able to hold and direct, or you should really say first, direct and hold our concentration in any activity. That is the power. So when I'm speaking, I am directing my attention to speaking and I'm holding it there without thinking what's happening at lunchtime or without thinking of what I'm going to say next or without worrying about what you think. You know, that is the attention. That is what is meant, but that is the power, you know. So the silence is in everyday activity. Doesn't matter what it is. And that is his practice. And in many ways, that is what we are practicing. That is Zen practice, to be able to get to that point. That doesn't mean to say, you know, that it is not separate from our life. It is our life. It is just that our awareness shifts. In everything we do, it is much more concentrated, you know, and much richer. So his silence, an especially unusual continuous practice, with such power of attention to making a strenuous effort while he was with Kokshi, he asked, so with that power already, he asked, what should he do? What he should do so as not to land in some class or stage. So he's got that already, that core, and then he asks, what do I do so I don't land into a class or stage or rank? But the word that I like the most, what do I do so I don't land in my story, in a story, the story of my life? No story. Imagine, no story. Where do I go not having any story? Imagine being free of your own story. Some have a good story. They have a great life because that's their story. Some have a really tough story because that's their life, because that's their story. Our story defines our life. That's big. You know, if you think about that. Whatever you tell yourself, whatever you believe, that's your story. That is your story. That is the delusion. And that is your life. So you can be at your deathbed and go, oh, I had a shit of a life. Or you can be at your deathbed and go, whoa, what a ride. You know, it all depends on what your story is. Be very careful on how you frame your story. And it is really that simple. It's really that simple. Of course, the story of Zen, if you like, or the practice of Zen, is to transcend it. You know, ourself is another story. Myself is nothing but a story that I have created. So I say, this is my life. It's nothing really than talking about myself and the story I have created around myself. So that's myself. And I always like that. There's a famous saying, and most people will know where it comes from, where someone says, you know, they're talking about Jesus. You know, he's not a Messiah. He's just a naughty boy. You know, Jesus is another story. Buddha is another story. You know, and of course, the story that we have about us revolves around rank. It revolves around stages. We have stages in our life. Little children, we are all naughty boys, naughty girls, you know. Or we might be very hurt. We might be very hurt, and we've built up this shield. No one's going to hurt me. No one is going to come near me. And this exterior, this aggression comes out, saying, no one is going to hurt me. You know. But we all do that. We all protect ourselves in some way. What are we really protecting? We are protecting our story. Because we hang on to our story, nothing else. These are shields. Our personality, our persona, the way we portray ourselves are shields that we put up to everyone. And the work that we do here is to dismantle the shields. Let go, let go, let go. So that we are totally vulnerable. And we are so vulnerable. And in order to get to that point of vulnerability, we let go of story. We let go of the story. That's the vulnerability. You don't need to be anyone. You don't need to be male. You don't need to be female. You don't need to be whatever your profession is. You don't need to be a boy. You don't need to be hurt. You don't need to be happy or sad. These are all stories that we create. So he's at that point and he says, what do I do in order not to land in that story, to land in that rank And he's already got that power of concentration. You know, what do I do to get there? Wow, what an amazing quest, you know, to even get to that stage, to see that like that, you know, to see that like that. What do I do to do that? And so it continues like that. I'd just like to say one more thing, because it's quite often misunderstood, especially relating to self and no self. You got to remember this was written, he wrote this in the 13th century. So, and in those days, there was no psychology. I mean, there was, if you like, the psychologists today, or some psychologists today, refer to the Buddha as the first psychologist, you know, as in because he delved into aspects of self and no self. And he already got into that in the year 500 BC, so 2,500 years ago. BCE, I should say, BCE, before the Common Era. Yeah. So that's 2,500 years ago. So when we talk about the self, as in our psychological self, that is basically the story that we've created since we were a little kid. And that story can, as I always mention, and you may have heard me say that many times, that story, depending on our conditioning or on our life depending on our circumstances, that can be all over the place. And we are all today here having our own story. And so all of a sudden, and by the way, that story is very powerful. We call that ego. That's our ego, if you like, or our, you know, what's another word for it? Our self-image. Self-image is a good word. That's our self-image. And that self-image is incredibly fragile. Really is. We can't just take an axe to it and get rid of it. It's not like that. And in a way, well, not in a way, actually, you cannot get rid of it. And the Taisho goes into that. You cannot get rid of it because we always fall back onto another story about me. We're just changing the script. We're the author of it. We can change the script. We can just you can take your life right now, okay, and start rewriting it. We're changing the story based on new conditions that arise. Based on insights, this is what this is about, insights and experiences that we get, we just change the script. We don't have to hang on. And letting go, that aspect of letting go of the old story, is very, very painful because we've hung on to that belief. We identify that whole identity part. What is my identity relates to that. And it's not easy to get rid of identity. It's not easy. And for some people, especially not for some people that have had trauma, it's very difficult because that trauma has shaped life, has shaped our entire life. You can't just all of a sudden say, oh, well, get over it. It just doesn't work that way. It is imbued in our body, in our cells, in our DNA. It is there, right there. Even through epigenetics now, people are talking about, and I talked about that before, trauma actually being passed on through generations. You know, it is in us. It's the same with our instinct for protection or fear. You know, that we've inherited that. Same, so we cannot just get rid of it. So the message is, be gentle. Be gentle with your self-image. And everyone approaches it in a different way. You know, so we all have different characters and we all deal with it in different ways. So be very gentle with it. Okay, that's just the message I wanted to give. And the other message here is that is also our functioning. That's the functioning aspect, you know, of our true nature. So we can say self-image, or small self or ego self, all these labels that we have for this concept that I have created called Arno, that's also my functioning. That's how I function. You know, very important. I cannot just let go of that function. I mean, if I do, and again, we'll talk about that a little bit more, if I do, what happens if I let go of it? What happens if I let go of it? To what degree can I actually let go of that functioning? How can I let go of the functioning of my body? How can I let go of the functioning of my biology, of my genes, of, you know, getting cancer or not getting cancer? How can I let go of that? I can't. It happens. You know, it's unavoidable. Unavoidable. I get back to that. Okay, so this is where the patriarch is at. He says, he practiced with Coach Chi, and he asked what he should do so as not to land in some stage. What do I do so I do not land in some stage, in some story? What do I do so I do not land in some story? Amazing thing. Truly, so this is now Kaizen saying this, truly he experienced the way fully and ended by not having any inclination to go further. I mean, whoa. He asked, I don't want to land anywhere, which means he doesn't want to go further. Because if you go further, that's a story. Not landing anywhere is like getting rid of all the stories. So that's where he wants to get rid of all ambition. Landing nowhere. You know, that's where he wants to go. So that is quite a practitioner. You know, truly he experienced. So he's, to get to that stage, you've already have high level of experience. He experienced the way fully and ended up by not having any inclination to go further. Actually, that reminds me of the Buddha. The Buddha, when he had his enlightenment stage, he went to heaven. And he went to heaven because he thought, well, according to the story in the sutras, there is no way I can teach this. There's nothing I can do. I've reached this point. Now I go to heaven. Now, heaven, of course, you can see it as other, as I said in the first presentation of this Teisho, heavens and earth, and these are all realms of our mind. Heaven is that realm of not needing to go further. That's heaven. That is complete Satori. That is like being at the stage of nothing at all. Exactly where he wants to go. That is heaven. So it is a state of mind where it's totally free. That is heaven. And the Buddha, coming back to the Buddha, he wanted to go there. And while he was there, he was encouraged to come out of his samadhi, to come out of that state, out of that blissful state, if you like, of meditation or whatever you want to call it, and go back into the world. So this is where, this is that Mahayana take now coming into it. Go back into the world and live amongst the day-to-day functionings of whatever is happening around us. Okay. So, truly he experienced the way fully and ended up by not having any inclination to go further. The patriarch promptly tried to get him to present his realization. So, okay, now I want to see where you're really at. The words are cheap. Present it to me, you know. Present his realization, asking, what have you done so far? Finally, the point was exposed. Now listen very carefully. The point was exposed. That's the point. Okay. The point was exposed and not shut up in a needle case. So there's no secrets. The only time it is a secret is it's secret in that we can't see it. So it's secret. But not because it is hidden, it's exposed. He exposed the point, but very few people can see it. The point was exposed and not shut up in a needle case. He said, I have not even tried the holy truth. That's the point. I have not even tried the holy truth. Straight away you add meaning. Gone. I have not even tried the holy truth. The point was exposed. No remainder. Nothing at all. Magazine. Just that. Hearing this is hard to hear. And meeting this is hard to meet. We cannot get out of our story. That's why it's hard to hear. That's why we cannot meet it. We immediately add. And that's what prevents us from seeing it. We immediately add. Even though you cease continuing, there is still an attachment to self. Says, there is still an attachment to self. And if this is so, you make the mistake of falling into the deep pit of liberation. So he's saying that actually to the master. So even not landing or wanting to land in a space where there is no story, he says, you make the mistake of falling into the deep pit of liberation. Isn't that beautiful? Even that is a stage, you know. That still is a stage, wanting to go there. Wanting to go to no stage is a stage. It's like the gateless barrier. It's like the same sort of thing. There's something still there, you know. So, again, that deep pit of liberation. And this is in our tradition, again, coming back to the lectures, when we reach that point of no self or timelessness, whatever. If you're sitting there in full samadhi, you know, that is still not integration. That is another stage. That is still not fully full realization according to Zen, according to Mahayana Buddhism. Okay, maybe in some traditions that is the highest realm you can get to, but certainly not in the Zen tradition. In the past or present, this situation is called Dharma attachment. Dharma attachment. Yunmen, which is the Chinese man, which is really Unmon, Pat talked about Unmon yesterday, called this the two sicknesses of the Dharma body. The two sicknesses of the Dharma body. And actually there is a case about the two sicknesses of the Dharma body. There is a koan about that. And I'll just read you out what they are. There are two diseases, so called the diseases, concerning the Dharma body. You have reached the Dharma body. By the way, the Dharma body is a beautiful, it's just another great name. And that's the thing you've got to get your head around. There's always different names for the same thing. And this is because don't get attached to one thing. Don't get attached to Buddha or Dharma or body or essential or phenomenal or emptiness. Don't get attached to this. Find your own language. Then it becomes real. Find your own words. Then it becomes real. Otherwise, it just becomes a thing. What's the Dharma body? I better study about what the Dharma body is. Unless you know what the Dharma body is for yourself, you never ever will know what the Dharma body is. It's just a concept. So Dharma, capital D, the way it is. That's the Dharma. The body is the way it is. The body. I'm the body Dharma. The Dharma body. Hunger. I'm hungry. That's the Dharma body. I could just hear the Dharma body out there going, tweet. That's the Dharma body. Those magnificent flowers, the flicking candle. Jack. You're a Dharma body. That's the Dharma body. Okay, Dharma body. Dharma the way it is, and the body, the functioning of it all. The great activity, the functioning of, that's the Dharma body. The way it is, unavoidable. And the functioning of it all, unavoidable. You know, that's the Dharma body. So, Yunmen called this the two sicknesses of the Dharma body. Coming back to that. Okay, in the koan it says, also there are two diseases concerning the Dharma body. You have reached the Dharma body, but you remain attached to the Dharma and cannot extinguish your own views. So when you're attached to the Dharma, oh, this is the Dharma, you make something separate out of it. You know, you cannot extinguish your own views. As soon as you say, this is it, you know, you're locked in again. You cannot extinguish your own views. Meaning that there's still a me that looks at it. Fully, you know, you cannot extinguish your own views. Therefore, you lead a corrupt life around the Dharma body. You lead a corrupt life. In other words, you're still in delusions. You know, you're kidding yourself. You're kidding yourself. That's what he's saying. You know, around the Dharma body, you might have all the trappings of being holy and or being a monk or being a nun, but you're kidding yourself. Yeah. This is one disease. Suppose you have truly penetrated to the end, right to the end, you know. If you give up further efforts, you know, it will not do. You examine yourself minutely and you say, I have no flaw. You say, I alone, or there's nothing there at all. You know, says, that is nothing but a disease. So anyway, I won't go into this koan here, but this is a very interesting koan in itself. So this is what he's referring to here. Dharma attachment. Yunman called this the two sicknesses of the Dharma body. In truth, this results from not passing completely through this situation. However, Kuan Yin not only just acknowledged his original nature, he penetrated this barrier. He's gone right through it. The patriarch asked, into what stage will you end up? That's the question that was his checking question, if you like. Into what stage, if you haven't even experienced or even dealt with the holy truth, the Four Noble Truth, if you haven't even dealt with that, what stage will you actually end up? In this deep, secluded place. So he's now talking about the timeless, that experience, that heaven, if you like, that state of mind that we might get the occasional glimpse of when our thoughts are completely gone, when we sit, that momentary nothing at all, you know. In that state of mind, in that deep, secluded place, there is no inside or outside. There is no reference point. There is no reference point. Because reference point relates to phenomena. It relates to discrimination. In order to have a reference point, you need to have an A and a B. If you just have A, there's no reference point. You need a B. We need a reference. We need different reference points. Okay. So the patriarch asks, into what stage will you end up? In this deep, secluded place, there is no inside or outside. After all, in this deep, final realm, not even a knife or axe can separate it. Nothing can separate it. Imagine, nothing can separate it because there is no set reference point. There is no inside, outside, dark, light. These are all labels that we use. But actually, in that moment of sitting, in that moment of concentration, when you get to that spot, and I'm sure many of you have experienced that even only for a second, that moment, there is no reference point. You cannot cut it. What are you going to cut that with? There's no axe. There's nothing. There's no knife. There's nothing you can cut with. There's nothing to cut and nothing to cut it with. You know. So that's what he says. You know, in that final realm, not even a knife or axe can separate it. Therefore, he asked, what stage can there be? There's no stage in that spot. What stage can there be? You know, there's no stage. Unclouded, in other words, no dust, unclouded. He penetrated this realm totally. He got to that point of emptiness, of no self, of experiencing that. Unclouded. he penetrated this realm totally. He said, if I have still not even tried the holy truth, what stage can there be? You know, what's the... So, again, that is a very, very deep realization. What stage can there be? That is not just a conceptual realization. That comes really from that experience, that what stage can there be? You know, what stage can there be? Even, then Kaizen goes on, even if you try to establish a class or a stage, there are no boundaries in the sky right from the start. Whoa. You know, there are no boundaries in the sky. Sky is that image of that emptiness. There's no boundaries in the sky. It's just sky, you know, from the start. Where can you build stairs? Imagine building a stairway in the sky. It's a lovely image. Where can you build stairs? He says, where can you build stairs? Those who understand this realm of emptiness literally have, since ancient times, fallen into a view that all things are empty and arrive at an understanding that the myriad things are non-existent. Ooh, the alarm bells should be starting to ring here. That the myriad things are non-existent. So this is where quite often people can end up in nihilism. In other words, there is nothing at all. What's the point? There's nothing at all. What's the point? Yeah. And so that's why it's also called a stage, and that's why it's called a sickness. You know, that's also why it's called a sickness. When we get to that point, we can easily stay there. We don't want to get out of it. We see the world all of a sudden really freely, but we do not want to get out of that stage. It is just so beautiful. There's no limitation. You know? And a lot of people want to stay there. A lot of people, by the way, personally, I think it's important that there are people that want to stay there because we need to develop that aspect of ourselves. But people that are meditating and hermits, they are the people that go to these spaces, that go deeper and deeper into their own mind to stay in that realm, if you like, of emptiness. But in Zen, that is called a sickness. It's called a sickness. Okay, so coming back to that fallen into view, so those who understand this realm of emptiness literally have, since ancient times, fallen into a view that all things are empty and arrive at an understanding that the myriad things are non-existence. That doesn't mean that we don't go there, of course. We need to experience that. But we need to get out of it as well. Yeah. Since Qing Yan cried out, I have not even tried the holy truth, how could he remain in the emptiness of things? Question. I have not even tried the holy truth. How could he remain in the emptiness of things? Look carefully, he warns. This bright, empty realm is brighter than the rising sun. It blinds us. It is brighter than the rising sun. Even though this vast, marvelous, true nature is not an object of discrimination, it possesses complete, perfect, and clear understanding. In other words, even though it is no duality, no separation, it possesses all of duality and all of separation. Nothing is excluded. So by saying this is empty, there is no duality, you know, you're falling into the trap of saying there's duality and there's no duality. Nothingness is also somethingness, or nothingness is no somethingness. This is not an easy thing to explain. But this is what he's referring to. Though it is not bound by bones and marrow. It is not bound by phenomena, bones and marrow. Bones and marrow or wood or whatever. It's not bound by that, this state of mind he's talking about. It has a bright body that is not covered or hidden. The Dharma body, if you like. It's not covered up or hidden. So what is the Dharma body that is not covered or hidden? Ten past. Oh, I've got really want to finish this in 10 minutes. That's it. Day-to-day activity, our day-to-day life. If we do not see this in our everyday functioning, we're stuck. It is right here in our everyday morass, in our whatever word you want to use, in our everyday mundane life. That is where it is shining. If we don't go back to that, we are just trapped in another realm. We need to see it very, very clearly in every form. When you look at life, you know, we could easily make stages out of life. We say, this is my childhood, this is my adolescence, this is my adult life. Now I'm getting a bit older, I'm getting into the middle age bit, and I'm getting ancient or whatever. Whatever it is. But we also classify it as, oh, that's a good stage, or that's a bad, I can't wait for retirement. Or we classify it as in, this is my working life, this is my home life, this is my Zen life. Or we classify it as, this is my free time, this is my holidays, this is my weekend. That's very confusing. And also, it adds funny things into our story. Like, a Sunday is much better than a Monday. What a lot of crap. You know? Or, this is not real. Because, how can this be real? Here we are in this ancient way of doing things. It's like, oh, when I go back home, I go back to my Apple computer and I start writing emails. And here's the video we're eating on the floor, you know. Every moment is our life. Every moment is this realm. You know, there is no play. Or you could say everything is play. You know, there is no, it is a seamless life that we put into all sorts of categories. And depending on the categories, we like it or dislike it. Really, it's as simple as that. Depending on the categories, we dislike it or we say, this is bad and this is good. And if this happens to me, it's really bad. I have a really bad life. And it just, we hang on to that so much that it flavors years and years and years, you know, of our life. That's how much we hang on. If something bad happens to us, and it might just be someone saying something, a loved one saying something we don't want to hear, or a bad childhood, we carry that with us and build armory around it. It flavors our entire life. So unless this empty realm from our sitting filters through and integrates in our day-to-day activity, it's a sickness. It's just another sickness. So that's what we call in Zen personalizing Zen, or I would say personalizing Buddhism. That's what personalization is. In psychology, they call it integration. We integrate into our bone and marrow, we integrate it completely. You know, that's what that refers to. So though it is not bound by bones and marrow, it has a bright body that is not covered or hidden. That is the bright body. It is not covered or hidden. The body cannot be discerned through motion or stillness. The body cannot be discerned through motion or stillness, nor can its knowing be discerned through ordinary awareness and understanding. Since ordinary knowing is also this wisdom. Ordinary knowing, in other words, I don't know, oh God, I don't know. That's this wisdom. You know, everything, if you see it, is you cannot fall out of it or into it. You know, it's this wisdom. Motion and stillness are also nothing else but this. And as I keep on saying, you know, in Zen, and this lovely phrase that Zazen is not sitting on the cushion. Zazen is standing up and sitting down, eating and drinking. It's a state of mind. It's that concentration, that power of concentration we get, of course, through the medium of practice, in order to have a state of mind that sees that in our day-to-day activity. Actually, nothing changes in our life. What changes is the way we look at things, our state of mind. Of course, we can make changes because of that. And as in cause and effect. You know, I might decide to change jobs because of it or something, you know. Of course, things change, you know, but they always do. You know, that's just the unfolding of it. Now he goes on to say, even bodhisattvas who reach this 10th stage, the 10th stage by stages, so they're the bhumis. So this goes back into Buddhist by numbers. There's different stages of becoming a bodhisattva. I won't go into those stages. A little bit like the 10 ox herding pictures. You know, these are stages as well. Even bodhisattvas who reach the 10th stage by stages still do not see Buddha nature really clearly. Why? You say, why? The Buddha said, because they postulate an essence of things and establish practices apart from ordinary activities. In other words, there's nothing holy. If you postulate that this is what I do in order to achieve this, and this is what I need to do in order to achieve this, you know, you're still stuck. You know, Joshua's, how do I practice Zen? Go and wash your bowls. That is a perfect example of integrating it into day-to-day activity. Go and wash your bowls. You know, there is nothing holier, nothing more complete, nothing to get beyond. Go and wash your bowls. That is really hard for us because we all want to go somewhere else. It does not align with our story. It does not align with our story. That is why that is so hard to get. You know, as soon as something does not align with our story, nah. There's a big wall goes up. That's why we're here. So let that drop. That's what we need to let to become vulnerable. Let that shield go. Let the story go. The identity go. So that we see it. It comes forth in everyday activity. So that's what he's saying here. Because they postulate an essence of things and establish practices apart from ordinary activities. They do not see Buddha nature clearly. Because for Buddhas, there are ultimately no practices and no realm of essence. They see Buddha nature thoroughly. This, by the way, comes from the Diamond Sutra. Those that have read, I highly recommend the Diamond Sutra, a very short sutra, but it really makes that point about bodhisattvas not being bodhisattvas. That's the same, and he mentions that here. I talked about that when we get to it. So because for Buddhas, there are ultimately no practices and no realm of essence. They see Buddha nature thoroughly. In the 8th book of the Great Nirvana Scripture, in the chapter Awakening of the Tathagata Nature, Tathagata is another name for Buddha, it says, although innumerable bodhisattvas are endowed with all the perfections and practices, the 10 stages still are unable to see their own Buddha nature. The Buddha has consequently said that their views are deficient. Thus, good sons, the bodhisattva on the 10th stage still does not clearly know or see Buddha nature. So how much less are disciples or self-enlightened people able to see it? As soon as we identify as enlightened, or bodhisattva, or Buddha, or Arno, or it doesn't matter what a label I use. As soon as I identify with it, I haven't got it. I am not there. I am still trapped in identity. There is no blue sky there. There is nothing there. So there's that dichotomy of you cannot win. Be in that in-between stage where as soon as you don't identify, oh, you're stuck in emptiness. And as soon as you identify, oh, that danger. In whatever area we are, it's neither that nor that. That is the doubt. That is the space. That is the freedom. The rest is entrapment. The rest is landing somewhere into a stage. You know, free of a stage is always continuous letting go, burning, burning like a candle, burns all the time, burning. So that's what he's saying. Thus, good sons, it didn't say daughters, just the sons. So are you stuck in sons or daughters? Who are you? Thus, good sons, the Bodhisattva on the 10th stage still does not clearly know or see Buddha nature. So how much less are disciples or self-enlightened people able to see it? With no reliance on seeing and hearing, and with no reliance on an external world or the use of the thinking mind, just try to look beneath them. In other words, look through it. Please look through it all. Look through it. There will surely be an unexpected realization of an alert knowing not gotten from someone else. Like not gotten from someone else. How can there be anything given to you by someone else? Impossible. Yeah, that is a wonderful, again, a wonderful realization. Okay, verse. Now, can you add some words to the story? He says. So it's of course referring to the case. So the verse refers to the case. Now, can you add some words to this story? Reaching this realm, if you can add a word to this story, you will make the tongueless one speak. Oh, you will make the tongueless one speak. If you can hear the principle in the koan, you will make the deaf one hear at once and make that person not speak and laugh. And so, okay, so that's, and now he gives, now in his verse, and he wrote some magnificent verses, Kaizen. He is now encapsulating all of what I've just said, or what he has said, I should say, what he has said and what the koan is. So in those two lines of the verses, he is somehow encapsulating this entire blah, blah, blah. Okay. When a bird flies, it comes and goes, but there are no traces. When a bird flies, it comes and goes. Seeing Maggie out there playing with the, what are they called? The what are those birds called? The plovers. It's just a delight, you know. There are no traces. You know, no traces means there's no story. There's no story. If you can see when a bird flies, or when I'm hungry, or the kettle is boiling, there are no traces. Or as I once said, no remainder. You know, that is what he said. When a bird flies, it comes and goes, but there are no traces. How can you look for stages on a dark path? How can you look for stages on a dark path? So dark, of course, is, it's so dark. Nothing can, you can't see anything. How can you even, if it's so dark, how can you even look? If it's so clear, how can you even look for stages?